Hey friends, if you're considering exhibiting at trade shows this upcoming sales season, you are going to love today's episode. My guest is Amy Loewenberg, who is the Director of Buyer Relations for New York Now. Amy is a seasoned veteran in the gift, home, and lifestyle industry, and she's an advocate for independent buyers and sellers. Amy leverages her unique experience on both sides of the aisles to drive growth, connect communities, and shape the future of retail. Amy is a partner to key industry associations. She's also an active Gift for Life board member. She brings a wealth of knowledge to every role that she undertakes because she has a deep understanding of market trends, purchasing dynamics, and she is focused on helping to guide mission-driven organizations. In today's episode, we discuss Amy's current role in buyer relations. We talk about how New York Now is innovating the trade show experience. We discuss everything from adapting trade shows to post-pandemic buying trends to the importance of sustainability and the emerging focus on multi-sensory shopping experiences based on customer psychology. Today's episode is brought to you by our Unlock Buyer Secrets interview series. To make a strong first impression with wholesale buyers, we need to do a few things really well. We need to make it easy for stores to purchase from us, we need to have clear pricing and terms and conditions, and we need to clearly communicate and add value at every touch point. And all of that becomes infinitely easier when we actively listen to our customers. This on-demand interview series will give you a competitive edge by providing a window into what buyers want and need from you. And the best part is it's only $27. So you can get access at proof2product.com/unlock. That's proof2product.com/unlock.
I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Amy, welcome to Proof to Product.
My gosh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's been a long time coming. You and I have risen in the same types of circles within the industry, and I feel like we could say hello to each other every now and then, but we never get to like sit down and just chat. So thank you for making time for me today.
So excited. Yeah, I definitely feel like we've been like ships that pass in the night. We like see each other and we wave and then we're like,
exactly. Exactly. Well, hey, you have such a rich background in the gift and home and lifestyle industry. I would love for you to share with our listeners how you got into this industry and what you're doing now at New York Now.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I guess I really do. But the irony I can tell you is that everything I've done has been like a perfect storm to where I am now, but it was not planned. And it just was very serendipitous. I can absolutely see those pieces in place. And I'm very pleased that my life has laid out in this direction professionally, because I think we all find ourselves in positions where like, what am I doing? And why am I here? And am I doing the right thing? And I had that as well. But now I understand everything that I did was for the reason of me being here right now. Okay, so let's go back to when I was a kid, all right? I started in retail. I grew up in New York, moved to California when I was a kid, Northern California. I jumped into retail hard. It was the bigger box stores. I worked for a couple of companies that are not around anymore, Natural Wonders and Learning Smith, and they were like 150 plus 200 locations. And I learned about retail on that level. And at that time, right, a little different than it is now. We don't necessarily have to go into the year, but you can figure it out. But anyway, I learned a lot and I found that I was really drawn to the whole art of customer service and working with customers. The presentation of the store wasn't necessarily under my domain. You follow directives and understanding about planograms and then learning about the operation. So the whole aspect of running that business, I found incredibly interesting. So I worked with both of those companies for a while, and that led me to moving to St. Paul, Minnesota. They gave me that like, Amy, if you're going to be promoted, you have to do this one last thing for us. And it's like, okay. So this East West Coast kid was sent to St. Paul, Minnesota. It was an incredible experience. But had I been a little bit more mature in that role, I would have seen the signs to see that the company that I was relocating with was going to fold in a matter of minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So I packed everything up from San Francisco and I moved to Minnesota and they plop me in the Mall of America and I am in a new world and I'm working every day. I hadn't even unpacked and like 6 months into it, it was bye-bye. So I had that moment of, do I go back? There is actually a reason why I'm sharing this with you, by the way. And so I had that moment of, do I go back to San Francisco or not? Why don't I see where I am? And I decided to see where I was. And I'm just grateful for that. I found myself in a couple of different jobs, but the main one was I landed in an interior design company called Textilis. And it was a small independently owned business, an interior design business by another woman named Amy. And, you know, I kind of popped in and said, I can run your whole store. It was so small, Katie. I was like, I can run your whole store. I can merchandise your whole store in a night. And she was like, okay. And it just turned into this incredible job where I led her store. She was taking me on buying trips. So I learned a lot about interior, you know, the basics of interior design. But then it was all home decor and gift up front. So she was taking me to trade shows. And she took me to the International Gift Fair. And I kind of walked into the Javits Center with those lights. It was a different landscape then. And it was like the heavens opened up. I've said this before in other interviews, like the heavens opened up and it was like, I am where I need to be. Like this was beautiful. And I just felt the excitement and the energy and all the different people and the products galore. It just felt amazing. And so she took me to Atlanta and she took me to Dallas. And then she wanted to sell her store. And for a hot minute, I thought that I would take it on and really decided that as much as I loved it, that this was not the place that I needed to put my roots in. Mm-hmm. So I ended up moving back to New York and came in running and I started working at Kate's Papery.
Yeah.
A lot of people know I was running their Village location and then I moved into their flagship store on 57th Street. But I really loved that art of buying because I was purchasing for Amy. I wanted to get into that buyer's role. And so I was able to navigate. I've skipped a couple of little jobs here and there. I was able to navigate my way into this next larger company called Blue Tulip. And that I was brought in as the paper buyer. I was literally brought in as the greeting card buyer. And that was the very beginning of my love affair with greeting cards. So I learned everything about this chaotic, beautiful, crazy sector of our paper industry called greeting cards. And I began a very different evolution to my professional education. I was working with my brands on a very different level. I was learning about the category and creating relationships that I still have to this day. I can tell you, Vanessa Harnick and I from Notes and Queries, I mean, we talk several times a year and bounce different ideas off each other. She taught me so much about the industry. She taught me so much about greeting cards. I had a huge project where as that company was growing, I'd started when there were like 10 locations, ended when there was 30, but about 12 stores into it, you had 12 stores with 12 different greeting card planograms, 12 different levels of volume and a lot of inventory. It had been a little mismanaged. And I ended up doing this year-long project where I had to streamline all of these stores so that we could continue growing in a very channeled manner. So with the help of my brands, I was able to come up with the appropriate planogram for growth. I pulled from like 38 designers down to a basic 12 with extra spinners at that time to add in that beauty and the fluff and the uniqueness and the handmade. Learned a lot about negotiation, learned a lot about margins, learned a lot about returning product or buying at the right level, how to work with reps, when to work with a rep, when not to work with a rep. I learned so much. And then I was blessed. I had two amazing analysts that supported my department and Tom Manning and Nate Pullen, I learned so much about the analytics behind the business. Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize how much I was learning. I still practice those processes to this day, actually. So I go into depth on Blue Tulip because I learned so much and still talk to a handful of people that I worked with. But it was a very poignant moment in my career as well, because I was a merchant as well. So I was learning how to be a merchant in an environment that I love. So again, I was going to trade shows. I was traveling around. I was making the purchases. It is fun spending other people's money. I will say that.
Yeah, I bet.
Definitely fun. And so then when Blue Tulip in 2010, with the crash, they crashed as well. I was then able to move into back into Kate's Papery, actually, but as a buyer. Nice. And I was their home buyer and their paper buyer. So I had greeting cards under my domain again, which was so much fun. But when I had come back to Kate's, it was under different management, and it was a family owned. It was kind of before too, but it was a different family. And with that one, I can say that I was wooed heavily. And then as soon as I got there, it was pretty clear that the brother wanted my job. So it was like, oh, I'm so not going to win this fight. So I just kind of played it out. I ended up staying with them for about a year. And then after that, I kind of found myself in this place where I'm like, what do I do? Am I going to go back into another buyer's job? You know, do I want to be in a store? Where am I? And so I started doing some consultant work. And that was really interesting because I was working with an international paper company that had reached out to me when I was at Kate's. And when I left, I said, not there anymore, but you should be in the United States. And they were like, help us. So I ended up doing work with them for like 3 years. Talking Oh, wow. Tables was an amazing British brand. And they I brought them to the they were at the stationery show, I say with love, and all those other markets. They were at New York Now. So then I found myself actually selling at New York Now at the time. It was crazy. So it's just all this is just coming full circle.
Full circle.
I was with them for a few years, worked with product development, learned a lot about just that international flavor of it. And what I found was really interesting there is just segue for a moment is that, you know, it really is true how different cultures use products differently. And we kind of think very narrow visioned when we're here. But when you're looking to create products that you want to resonate internationally, you really have to understand the culture and the subculture. Cause like this may be known, everybody may be like, Amy, we all knew that. But I didn't know that the gift napkin that we have in our paper goods that we put in our bathrooms for people to dry their hands on. Those are the napkins that you put on your dinner table in London. And that would be like the biggest insult to see that napkin in somebody's bathroom. And so just like learning the differences on how product is perceived, I thought there's very definitely a beauty and a science behind that. But yeah, it speaks to getting to know your environment. And something else that I'll get to is getting to know your audience, right? That was really educational for me. And then from there, I jumped into Housing Works, which is a nonprofit here in the city that helps with education and housing for people infected with HIV/AIDS. And I brought a buying program to them. So
oh, cool.
They fund their organization through multiple thrift stores. And as people were holding on to products or their belongings more, right, which could also happen as our economy changes, people don't funnel through products faster, the thrift stores weren't getting the kind of level of donations that they were getting. So they were looking to do those like, you know, off price to like fill it in with some of, and so that was perfect for me. So for all my connections at market, I would go to Shirelia and say, what are you trying to get rid of? And I would buy like all their inventory that's already like grotesquely marked down at like 75% off for pennies on the dollar. And then I would bring it back to the thrift stores. And still, I was able to provide, you know, a great candle from Vance Guitera for like $4. But, wow, you know, back in its prime, you know, that sold for $30. So I brought that new program there and learned a lot about fighting for a cause that was near and dear to me and being a part of a community in that way and supporting people in need. So Housing Works was amazing. And then obviously being a non-for-profit, it's not always a stable environment. And so I found that my job was going to be ending and I needed to figure out what I was going to do next. And I had always looked at Emerald because it's in my backyard. And I was like, how could I even consider going to Westchester? I'm an Upper West Side kid. Like, I can't commute like that every day. So like, I never really looked at them, but I found myself in this place of, you love trade shows. You love it. Take a look. And on a lark, I just opened up the website and there was a job, buyer relations manager. This is honestly, I was like, I am who they need.
Yes.
I have everything they need. And I don't think I ever went into a job interview so confident in my life. Sent my resume in, had an interview within days, and had my offer within days.
Oh, I'm sure they were like, we got to scoop this woman up.
It was so much fun. And so now I've been with Emerald under the New York Now brand for 6+ years.
Wow.
I'm now the director of buyer relations. I've seen a lot of iterations and I've been able to pull in all of my experience of working with buyers, being a buyer, understanding product, understanding the way we need to make purchases, learn because everything is changing all the time, asking the right questions, and also getting immersed in the industry association aspect, which I have dove into hard over the last 2 years. So that has gotten me so much more familiar with other categories, other groups, the way other people do businesses. I mean, just learning, you spoke with Kelly Bristol the other day, and I've learned so much about rep groups. And I'm going to say there are trials and tribulations, but the beauty of what they give people, but that's an industry, a segment of business that's changing. We're all changing. I get to see it at this level and I get to be that connector and sharer of information.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have written a better job for myself.
No, I don't think so. Amy, one of the reasons I wanted to chat with you for the podcast is to talk through, you mentioned this just a minute ago, the changing landscape of the industry. But more so, what I would like to hear from you is changing landscape of trade shows and the event space. So what are some of the challenges you've seen over the last few years in this space? And then I guess after that, I'd like to talk about what New York Now is doing to adapt and evolve. But what are the key challenges you've seen?
I mean, I think in a world of trade shows, it's easy to say, what is a trade show? It's an event that brings two different groups of people together, buyers and sellers. And our main role is to sell that space. And for me, it's to get the buyers in, and for sales is to get the brands in and allow you an environment that you can conduct the best business that you can possibly do. We can be really direct here. I know you have experience with New York Now. I know you have great experience with the stationery show. Mm-hmm. And the thing that we learn is that business ebbs and flows, and the way they're run ebbs and flows, and the need ebbs and flows. And so at the end of the day, I guess what I would say is trade shows are always going to evolve based on the needs of who's running them and based on the dynamic of what's happening in the culture, right? So that's going to impact the types of trade shows that are developed. Like we have Nicole, who just created Stimulate, which is a sexual awareness market. I mean, that came from nowhere and there is a huge need for that sexual education. That wasn't in our playground 5 years ago. You know what I mean? So you have to look at what's happening right now and then try to figure out how do I create something that has legs that I can ebb and flow it, but still stay true to like my values and what my brand is. And I think that's kind of the key to running a business. And I think it's the key to running a trade show. You have to be able to be fluid and make changes and be very cognizant of what the consumer is asking for or who the customer is that you're asking for. So for trade shows, like we're a temporary trade show, so we don't deal with showrooms. In one hand, that gives us so much more flexibility because we come and we go. And then you don't have to pay rent with us. You just have to come to the Javits, which is not the most conducive financially, right? But if you want to be in New York, it's the market to be at. We have a very large consumer base that comes. We have an amazing group of buyers that continually come and all these new buyers that are coming around because of new business. So the challenge is how do you speak to these different, literally, generations? So I'm going to move away from the actual operations of a trade show for a moment and just talk about the buyer. What's changing and shifting is, who is your buyer and how do we get them? How do we give them what they need? And how do we find out what they need, right? The memory of what New York Now was, the New York International Gift Fair, that's never going to be the same. That was a beautiful aspect of New York Now. That's a history and a legacy that, I mean, can I jump back for a minute? Do you mind if I jump off of this for a second? I don't know if everybody understands the legacy of New York Now. And if they do, you're going to listen to it again. And if you don't, I want to share this with you because I'm incredibly proud of it that we just hit our centennial year. That was last year. There is no other market that can say that. And to me, what that says is in the ebbing and flowing of doing business, we were at the foundation of it. And I'm incredibly proud of that because you have to look at the industry and how it's grown and developed. You had George Little and I think seven other men, salesmen, put together a show in a Chicago hotel, and that saved them from traveling overseas. And thus the first show was created. And then it was in such demand. I mean, I'm totally abridging this history. I can send it to you afterwards if you're interested.
I would love to see it. Yeah.
I wrote an article on it. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. We'll include it in the show notes, too.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. Because then what happened is that the need for it was so major that they started doing more and more shows. It started growing and developing. And then flash forward, you have today's landscape. And something that was incredible, I actually get goosebumps from this, is that we were able, I should say, I just spent the day with him. One of my most cherished memories is walking the aisles with a wonderful elderly gentleman named Stanley Cornwell. I have his picture right above my desk right here. And he was our first legacy buyer because his father was one of the seven men who worked with George Little that created the International Gift Fair, thus New York Now. And I was able to walk him down the aisles and he was just sharing stories of back what was and back in the day, telling me he was carried around in a basket when he was a baby. Like, he grew up in this industry, and his family and that group of men really are what created, to me, where we are right now. And the fact that we do have all of this, we have competitive markets, we've got all these events that are just sprouting out of nowhere. So I have to say that history is amazing. And New York Now in its heyday in two floors with like 6,000-7,000 brands, it was amazing. I still have blisters from those days, but that's not necessarily needed now. And so where New York Now is now is, how are we the market of the future, and how can we continue to give you what you need in an ever-changing, very volatile landscape, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the fact that we're two times a year is easy because we don't have to deal with showrooms. We've made some changes in our halls. We're moving, hold on, I think I have it written down here. We're moving to different halls so that we can make our assortment just a little bit clearer for shopping. We're going to Hall 3B and 3A, and that's going to allow us for a more connected show. And it's going to unite our three core categories, which is home, gift and lifestyle, and jewelry and accessories. If you remember back in the day, there were multiple collections and 1,700 sub-expos. So what we've done is we've really taken what was already a lovely market to walk up and down because of the ease of the way it's laid out, but we've just made it far more conducive to understanding the neighborhoods that you're in, to be able to find the products that you need that will obviously resonate with your business. So
that's great.
We continue to work in that. We have our digital tools, which are major. We acquired Bulletin a couple of years ago, and that extends our stretch year round, which is wonderful. It also expands it's like a store that never closes, which is fantastic. That's our platform. And it's also the platform used by multiple markets within Emerald, or it will be. So that was the reason behind the acquisition. But what that has also given us is it allows us to highlight the stores that we have in real life on the floor, but there's also like 3,000 additional brands on that site that you can work with. So it completely broadened our category assortment and buying abilities. Yeah. So that's another major aspect that we've invested in.
That's exciting. As the director of buyer relations for New York now, you must get a lot of feedback from buyers or just have, you know, side conversations with folks who are attending these shows. How have their buying patterns changed? I asked Kelly Bristol this from the rep standpoint. I've had my own conversations with manufacturers and buyers, but I'd love to hear from you. How are you seeing buying patterns change?
Yeah. Well, I would tell you the information that you got from Kelly was spot on. I mean, she knows her business. She really does. We've got shorter buying cycles. We've got people aren't purchasing necessarily a year out anymore. It may depend. Department stores may still be on that cycle, but I don't think that a lot of them are really diving heavy into that. But the shutdown changed the way we're able to buy, right? Mm-hmm. And the reaction on how to protect your business was the overbuy because you were not going to receive everything that you purchased. And then it kind of evened out, and thank God that we got some normality back. But we trained buyers that it's okay to buy quickly because mm-hmm. people, like for anybody that didn't have a website during the shutdown, now they have a website, you know, so like we did the same thing here. So being able to purchase very quickly, the vendors learned how to turn their product around faster and whatever that is, either their developing process or their own purchasing process so that the buyer could buy from them at a smaller and a faster rate. So the quantities may have changed, but the speed of which those orders were being placed were happening. So those are the normal aspects that we're still kind of in right now. But then to take us, and then, you know, I mean, I can take another sidestep too, because I like to talk about what was, what is, and what will be. So we saw how we were affected by the shutdown, right? And now we can talk about how we will be impacted by the tariffs that are coming our way. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of education that has to be shared about that. And I'm sure you know a lot about it. But I mean, that's absolutely going to impact the way buying is done going forward. We have to see what happens and we have to see how we make accommodations, but a lot of big boxes already making accommodations. So we do know that changes is coming in that manner. So I could talk to you about that for a really long time, but let's jump off of that for a minute and go into now the actual product of what's changing. So what I'm hearing from the buyers is that, you know, if you look at the way product impacts people, right? So you and I, we go shopping, we find great things we like, they make me smile. This candle smells beautiful. I'm going to buy it and put it in my house. And I bought three of them because I'm going to give them as gifts. That's great. Something else that we have gotten over the last 5 years is being pretty thrifty on the money that we spend. And it needs to mean something. Mm-hmm. So one, we're looking at sustainability measures, we're looking at materials, and we're looking at give back on a very, very loud level, which is so beautiful to see. And that the demographic of the age of the buying consumer is changing. There is a very, very strong draw to wanting their efforts to mean something. I want my dollars to mean something. So I want to know what village you support and what small woman's business I can impact and how my dollar is going to travel and help people. So mm-hmm. that just continues to get louder and louder, right? Which is beautiful.
Yes.
Then you also get into health and wellness, right? So that is like we all see categories ebbing and flowing. And so health and wellness definitely was flowing post-shutdown. Makes perfect sense, along with that feeling of nesting and making your home beautiful. All makes perfect sense. Layer in that you want to make purchases that are going to impact people. So there's smarter buys. They're doing more research. So whether you're I know I bounce back and forth between the B2B retailer and the actual consumer. So I'm sorry about that, but
we're following.
Okay, good. Welcome to my world.
I'm following.
To get back to the B2B buyer. Okay. The retail and the buyer, they need to purchase specific items that's going to move the needle for them. So if you look at what's happening culturally, you can take a scientific approach to where you move forward. Now, one, you look at your data and your analytics, which hopefully you have, and you are visiting and you are doing your testing and you are doing all that stuff that you teach people how to do, Katie, I know that, right? But, you know, you're also looking at what's happening as a culture. We need to feel better. So let's lean into health and wellness. But wait, I have a home store. So how am I going to start purchasing so that I can lean into this and I can resonate with the consumer that comes into my store? So now my focus is a little bit different. It's not necessarily that candle, but what is it about that candle that resonates? Is it that it comes with a soundtrack? So now we're layering the senses. It's, you know, an audio and a scent, and visually it's beautiful. So that is where we are right now. It's this layering of senses. And I think we were talking about it before. You heard of like neuroaesthetics?
Mm-hmm. I hadn't until you mentioned it before we started recording.
So this is very interesting because I think it layers into how I do my job, actually, and how I communicate to the people that I work with. It's a fascinating concept. And I've got some notes right here because I really
explain to folks what it is.
So it's all about designing spaces that truly connect with people on an emotional level. It's not just about making something look good. It's about creating environments that feel purposeful and resonate with us. So I see this as a game changer because it's how we approach buying and trade shows. Mm-hmm. So this is what's happening for 2025. It's not just about the product anymore. I mean, products are at the core and they're always going to be at the core. And that is what we do and we love it. But it's about curating an experience and inventory that will inspire a well-being and connection. Yeah. So that is something to layer in with your home decor. It is something to layer in with your, you know, journals and desktop goods. Like we're at work. I'm at my home office right now and I've got things all around me that make me feel good, that are layering the senses for me. So I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, we're doing some programming at the market on this as well. We've got, I don't want to give it away yet, but we've got some dynamic speakers. And so this is an area that I think is also going to unify a lot of different types of buyers together because it's a commonality. Mm-hmm. So I may buy this category and you may buy that category. But there is a commonality of wanting to layer in the senses. I think we've always been aware of it, but we never really knew the science behind it. And they are pulling out the science behind it now.
Yeah. Well, as I was listening to you, I was thinking, yes, I talk a lot about making your trade show booth an experience that draws people in, that makes them feel good, that leaves them wanting more. But you're right. We've never talked about the scientific aspect of the psychology and the different senses, our sight, our sound, our smells, and how that plays into the space that we use when we're exhibiting, or yes. Even now you're carrying that over into the product and how you're developing the product. And I love that because I think there's a lot we can tinker with in our mind and our R&D, our research and development, in terms of how we want to take our product line even further. So, and I think too, going back to something you said earlier, people are watching their purse strings really tightly right now. And so if they are going to spend money on something, having it not just serve a functionality, but also have this connectedness and have that health and wellness aspect, if that's the type of product, or, you know, just, I think we need to think bigger about the impact we're making with these products, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, you're saying it. It's making data-driven decisions, mm-hmm. right? So we as creators, store owners, or product developers, we are looking to create something that, I mean, maybe it represents us and our feelings and our brand. Like there's a lot of emotional aspects that are tied into it. But in terms of running a business, and I'm sure you see that a lot too, I create something really beautiful. But I don't know how to sell it. I don't know mm-hmm. how to, right? So you have all these layers to it. And I know, you know, we have to look at the data because that will provide a trend and it'll help us to make educated decisions, but it also helps us to make educated guesses. And mm-hmm. I think that's where the real fun starts. It's once really understand, like, I know this is the core of my business. This is my bread and butter. I know that anytime I draw something that has, you know, an ombre effect, or that I'm creating jewelry that's purely gold and a gemstone, whatever it is that you do and you create, you're going to create what your business says, or, you know, I sell a lot of this, so I have to make more of them, or you should be, right? But mm-hmm. you have to make it in your essence, so that this is like, I know that I'm wearing Julie Cohen earrings, right? Which I do all the time, by the way. But when you start thinking about this different layer, how do you take that into the way you design and develop? How are you thinking about it? Because you should. Because yeah. with AI and customer service and all these things, if you want to stay true to your brand, stay. But that also means that you're stagnant. You can stay true to your brand, but you can evolve it so that it speaks to more people. And that's exactly what we have to do at New York Now. We have to continually evolve our brand so that we speak to more people, because it's not about just saying, this is the best group ever. We're going to work for you and we're good. Check. It's no, we love you. We're going to keep doing this, but there's this whole range. There's this whole new growth coming in. And how do we speak to them? Oh, they don't talk or even listen in the manner that these guys do anymore. So how do we communicate with them? And then how do we bake in this scientific neuro stuff? Literally, we have to be like a professor in a lab, but that's the fun part of it, right? I mean, that's what I think.
I find this fascinating. And I think that, frankly, it's refreshing to hear you talk about this as someone that's representing New York Now, because I think from the outside, sometimes people feel like, oh, they're not innovating. They're not trying to change. But in fact, you are. And there's a lot being done in terms of the education, the way you're bringing in buyers, the way you're bringing in exhibitors, the way you're thinking about these different communities that are coming together to make it easier for them to connect and easier for them to do business. And hearing you talk about this is just really encouraging about what's still to come. So thank you for taking the time to do this. I would love for you to share where our listeners can learn more about New York Now if they're considering exhibiting or attending as a buyer.
100%. I mean, what I would say is you can go onto our website and all of our contacts are there, but I will connect you directly to who you need to be connected with if you're seriously interested. There's a lot happening and we're getting a lot of win backs, and we are awesome at supporting new and emerging. We have the incubator program, we've got the curator program, and we mentor our people because we know that bringing in somebody newer to the trade show landscape needs that help. We've got resources online, Know Before You Goes on the side of the buyer and on how to work the side of a brand. But I can tell you, I don't know of other markets that are doing that. And that's another element that I'm incredibly proud of. And if you didn't know we were doing that because you haven't been here for a few years, you can sit in that seat of, I remember what was, but it would behoove you to realize that everything changes.
Yep.
And so have we. And by the way, I can have the hardest conversation and the most poignant conversation because I know New York Now and I know the iterations that we've had and I know our strengths and I know the areas that we need to make stronger, and we're doing it. We have an incredibly dynamic team right now working really hard for our February market, and it's shaping up really nicely. I work on the VIP programs. I work on the hosted buyer programs. We have roundtables that are so much fun. We have a new sales director who's incredibly dynamic. She comes from within Emerald, but she's got fashion behind her. We've got our event director, Matthew Mathiason. And I got to tell you, we're just all working really hard to put together a show that is not its end result. We're still growing and we're still going to get larger and larger. And we have advisory boards where we're bringing people in, because we too know that if we don't get that information, we can't make the changes possible. So what I would say is reach out to me. I can absolutely give you the right information. We'll give my contact information with this podcast. You can also find me, if you don't mind me saying, on Instagram.
Yes, please.
Right under my name, it's Amy Lowenberg, Lowenberg. And you can always DM me. I'm on LinkedIn and I am a conduit of bringing you to the people that you need to talk to. But you should find out what we're doing and what we've done before you assume that we're not doing anything.
Absolutely, Amy. I'm so glad you said that. Thank you for your willingness to chat with everybody one-on-one too. We'll include your email if you're open to that.
Bring it on.
Be careful what you wish for, friend.
I know.
But we will include all those links in the show notes so people can get a hold of you. But like I said, our industry is constantly evolving, constantly changing. And I think it's so great and refreshing to hear from folks like you who are, we haven't chatted in a while. I haven't heard what's going on with New York Now. I haven't heard. And I know many of our listeners are the same. They might hear bits and pieces from friends or people that exhibited a year ago or even in the last round in summer. Ultimately, it's best to go straight to the source and find out what's going on and would this benefit my business? And if it does benefit your business, fantastic. If it doesn't benefit your business, that's okay too. You will find something that does.
Absolutely.
Going in with questions, with an open mind and finding out what's the best fit for all of us is what you want and what I want too. So
100%, 100%. And I would say thank you to you because you do so much for so many people. And honestly, I think the art of creating something to put out in a public space, it takes so much courage. And I'm so inspired by people who do that and people who run their own businesses, but also the people that actually take the time to help them do their business better. You are definitely not unknown, but you know, you are behind them, making sure that they have all the tools and the resources that they need. And so I would say thank you to you because you're helping our industry become stronger and stronger. And it can be volatile. And if we're not continually strengthening and bringing more people out there, then we don't get to shop on a Saturday. And Small Business Saturday is coming up.
It is.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for your kind words, Amy. I really appreciate it. I know that a very large chunk of our community exhibits at New York Now. It's one of the top performing shows for our community. We have a lot of people exhibiting in a lot of places, but I would say the strongest contingency still tends to be New York Now. So yeah, just thank you for all you're doing to support the brands and the buyers, because we do need a place to meet face to face. I think it's the strongest way to build those relationships and make those sales for those that can make it there and can be there. So yeah, thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You're very welcome.
All right. Big thanks to Amy today for sharing these updates with us. While the world of trade shows continues to evolve, there really is nothing better than meeting with our customers face to face and also using that time to connect with peers and suppliers and all sorts of other people in the industry. If you have questions specifically about New York Now, please do reach out to Amy. We've included her info in the show notes so you can easily reach her. And if you found today's episode helpful or you know someone else that's considering trade shows for the upcoming season, please share with a friend and leave us a review at ratethispodcast.com/PTP. Lastly, if you are wanting to get more information about what wholesale buyers are looking for and what they're needing from manufacturers these days, check out our Retailer Roundtable interview series. For just $27, you'll hear from 6 independent shop owners about how they like to be pitched, how they prefer to buy, what they're looking for from their shops, and where they're facing challenges today. All of which will help you make your sales pitch stronger when you're reaching out to retailers yourself. So snag that at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. Have a great rest of your day. I'll be back next week.